wait till you go back and sit in that order.
Okay, we're recording.
Okay. All right, good afternoon, everybody, and I apologize for the delay. I was looking for you at the commission room, and I didn't recognize the face there, so I realized that I better take a look, and then realized I need to be here at one of my many offices I'm supposed to be at. So welcome to the Thursday, August 19th, 2021, Orange County Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council 823 subcommittee meeting. It is about 2:10, so we're a little bit late. Being that we have so many of you online, we're going to go ahead and do roll call for who's here. So again, Steve Sentman is the chair. I'm here. Kim Doyle.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. Kimberly Doyle on behalf of Todd Spitzer with the District Attorney's Office.
All right, Kim. Thank you for being here. And Laura Jose. Judge, whoops, I'm sorry. Judge Melrose.
Sorry about that. Yes.
Oh, Darren, I got you.
Yeah, Darren Thompson, Assistant Public Defender, standing in for Lori Jose.
Thank you, Darren. Judge Melrose.
Good afternoon, everybody. Judge Melrose, present.
Thank you for being here. Raymond, I see you.
Right here, Brooke Raymond, present. Judge Keisha.
Thank you, Raymond. Don, I see you up there. Don Smith.
I am here, Dawn Smith, representing Healthcare Agency, Children and Youth Behavioral Health. Thank you.
Thank you. Heather Benjamin, I see you.
Present for Waymakers, Heather Benjamin as a community member.
Thank you. Lynn Garrett.
Lynn Garrett, Department of Education.
Thank you. Steve Kim.
Steve Kim, present, Project Kinship and community member.
Thank you. Nazlee Restrepo.
Present, Project Youth OCBF and community member.
Okay, and Ken Santini sitting right next to me.
Yes, sir. Present, Ken Santini with the Social Services Agency.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. And again, I apologize for the delay here. We'll go ahead and get started. We've done our welcome and introductions. We're on to item number two, discussion of services programs provided by members and entities. And I want to just take a minute just again to keep us focused where we're at. As we work on our juvenile justice realignment annual plan, we do have several areas of the plan put together. The first part of the plan is that we put the subcommittee, which we have that together. The second part of that plan is to ensure that we cover a variety of areas related to the plan: target population, program services, juvenile justice realignment block grant funds, facility plan, retaining the target population in the juvenile justice system, regional efforts, and data. And for today's meeting, we had two attachments that came with each of your packet. The first attachment was item number two for part five on the facility plan. We will come to that secondarily. I wanted to talk a little bit about part three section that was submitted for the group program and services. Again, provide a description of facilities, programs, placement, services, service providers, supervision, and other responses that will be provided for the target population. And before we go too far, I do want to acknowledge and thank Judge Motowiecki, as well as Chief Deputy Daniel Hernandez, as they have put this comprehensive plan together for us to take a look. And I do have Daniel here if there's any questions related to it. Before I bring Daniel up, or the committee has any questions, you'll see the different sections. It's not really intended to be a phased program, per se, for the youth that would be in the Secure Track program. But as you can see, each section addresses the areas for the youth as they go through the Secure Track program. The first section is the recommendation, court commitment to Secure Track. Second part is the transition to the commitment process. The third part of it is the in-custody program services, and if you turn to the next page, you'll see the menu, a list of different programs that we currently have. And if I remember correctly, and I'll have Daniel help me with this, there also may be some programs listed here that we need to enhance and or add to our options for our youth. And the last and just as important phase is the transition to reentry services program from the intake and supervision. So at this time, Daniel, I didn't know if there's anything that you wanted to present on that.
Defer to Judge Motowiecki first, and
okay.
Add if she
okay.
Would like me to.
Thank you, Daniel. Judge Motowiecki, is there anything you wanted to add to this comprehensive list here of services and programs for our youth?
Thank you, Chief. And I do want to thank Dawn Smith and Steve Kim, who who are also part of the ad hoc because it was really a combined effort of identifying the existing programs and services, and then taking what Chief U had put down as far as the phases. And it's really, as you said, it's kind of like just a phased approach, and that is we're going to identify at intake what's going to happen, what should be happening, what programs and services are available, and then as a youth moves through the facility, to constantly identify the programs and services that we need or we need to enhance for the existing programs and services that we have for this target population, because that's what we're really talking about is the programs and services for the target population. So what I think what we want to do now is provide any additional input.
So with that, Judge, I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit there, but I think what you're asking is if we can just go through each section with the committee to have a discussion around that.
Just have additional input from any of the larger subcommittee members, because it really is, we tried our best at identifying existing programs and services for our target population, and then identifying the ones that we need, and any additional support that we would need for those programs and services.
Okay. All right, Judge. Also, Dawn, thank you, and Steve Kim, thank you, too. I realize you're both on the committee, so just a special thanks, because we're fortunate here in the County of Oranges. We have many services available, but to your point, Judge, to ensure that if there's areas that we need to cover or add and or enhance for the type of services that our youth will need. I think something for the committee to keep in mind, too, as this initial plan is put together, we will vote on all the as it, its entirety here in the next couple of meetings coming forward. But to understand that this plan, as we put together, as we come into our next year and the year after that, we will be adding and subtracting to the plan if needed. Because once we get the youth into the program, we may identify an area that we may have overlooked inadvertently, or more importantly, maybe there's an area that we have that would not be needed, and we can replace it with some other type of program and or service. So with that, Daniel, did you want to come on up?
So just to add a little, some additional comments. Some of the conversation revolved around the process itself. If you notice in going from phase one to phase two, transition to the commitment process that we discussed was enhancing a process we already use, which is a case conference process upon release, and bringing that case conference collaborative kind of child and family team meeting to the intake part of the process. So using existing time frames that are also consistent with the statute, we discussed within the first day, 10 days of intake, coordinating that child and family team meeting to help establish the youth's case plan collaboratively for their stay and future reentry. And then those case plans would be updated every 30 days consistent with statute. As far as in-custody programs go, there are some of these do exist already, like substance abuse treatment, for example, is on the list there. But then we will need to, I think, highlight which ones are new and which ones would be subject to new contracts or other where other development is needed, or where that maybe that would come into play during our budget discussion later on. So there are additional services, new services that will fill gaps that currently don't exist in that in-custody programs list, as well as the transition and reentry services program. Program list. So yeah, I think it would be good if folks have had time to look at this. You know, I know it's only been posted for a week, but to maybe get input now and then also. Possibly for the next meeting as well, maybe we could add some additional comments or suggestions from the larger group to then hopefully add this to the template and then approve it at a later date. Any questions for myself?
Okay, so I'm trying to look up there at any committee members in relation again. Daniel, thank you for that. We've had this for about a week's time, but even if today you saw something or you didn't see something till a later time, we still have time to build upon this. But Daniel, to your point, there are some areas that we are looking to expand. One of those that jumps out to me is the on-site 24-hour mental health services that would be available 7 days a week to be a more proactive response.
Yeah, I mean, I can go ahead and comment on some of the ones
okay.
that I can, you know, yeah, call out as definitely new services. So if you're looking at the second page of the document under in-custody program services continued, the first item, consistent evidence-based cognitive behavior therapy approaches or groups, that refers to of course, CIGU and a healthcare agency provides cognitive behavioral therapy, but from probation's vision and mission statement, it's our purpose to also reduce recidivism. And so, in addition to you know the healthcare agency's focus on mental health care, of course. So, these evidence-based cognitive behavioral techniques are intended to focus on. Criminal thinking and behaviors related to you know the probation department's mission and some of there are some very specific evidence-based programs in the industry and our staff already utilize those but we're looking for a process or a provider to be a consistent provider of those services to our folks to our youth that are in our facilities. The 24-hour mental health services. Like Chief Sandman pointed out, just a restorative circle program of some sort. We do offer those programs in two small pockets of our facilities. At the Youth Leadership Academy, we have a few staff and a few staff that are trained that facilitate those groups. And at Juvenile Hall, in one unit, a Department of Ed of Education staff facilitates those groups. But again, to enhance that, make it consistent, help it to be consistent. And maybe even expand those practices to additional units. So some of these other services are intended to emphasize that you know the need to either continue or enhance things like sex offender treatment. We do have a sex offender treatment program at Juvenile Hall. However, if we were to have youth formally sent to DJJ for sexual offenses, we would just want to make sure that our program is sufficient to satisfy maybe even more serious needs than youth we would have previously sent to DJ for those youth that we would have previously sent to DJJ. Trauma-focused clinical interventions, again, refer to just the overall intent and focus on providing trauma-informed interventions with whatever we do. Vocational interests and assessments that for students who fall outside the K through 12 system. So Lynn was a part of our ad hoc as well, and we just had some discussion about that. We have a very robust services, vocational services for the students at all of our facilities, but it is K through 12. And so so something new for a 23 population would be extending those vocational opportunities to the post K through 12, of course, our target population, basically, right? Educational programming for post high school diploma. Again, we have college courses going on in all of our facilities, and it's just ensuring that those are robust enough and are providing adequate services to the youth that are ready to take that opportunity.
You know what, Daniel, looking at some of these too, I think to your point is to make sure that there's a theme with the type of programming that we have. I see on here socially and culturally responsible restorative practices.
Right.
So that would possibly bleed over into other
right.
programs or
so. Yeah, a lot of these headings are things that could be included into a scope of work, for example. So if we're going to be requiring some kind of therapeutic service, then we would want it to be mindfulness-based or trauma-informed. These are things that can be added to what we're requiring of the service and just make sure that that's part of what's being provided. So these are not all independent programs necessarily. They could just be requirements of whatever new services we want to add. Then some additional things like the peer mentor navigator service is something that we all were very adamant in agreement about having that type of service to follow a youth from intake, post-release, be a part of those child and family team meetings, help the youth navigate the system, be an advocate for the youth, help interpret what all of the system partners are providing to the youth. And it's something we've discussed previously is a lot, most of our agencies have transitional folks that help the youth through these different processes, but then we have a youth who's being spoken with by five different people, five different adults, and so we want to have the system navigator to be with them, make sure they understand those things, and make sure they get to where they need to go, and with a specific outlined item in there with available transportation services, so we can help youth get to where they need to go, make sure that transition takes place post-release. We've also added probation positions and training resources. By probation positions, we're looking, and that's not necessarily additional hired people, for example, but we may have the need to enhance the staffing and supervision in some of these areas. We may have to, it may be prudent to fund research support for what we're doing, and also training for staff and even collaborative stakeholders regarding a lot of the things that are mentioned here. You know, while we do, we have a very robust training program, anything new related to the 823 population, especially if we're talking about things that were done at DJJ previously that we haven't done and are taking on as a new process, then we would want to make sure our staff are appropriately trained. So there's some consideration for that. Yeah, if you have any questions, I'm here. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Daniel. May I ask a quick question in the phase, in that phase three, under the bullet that says on-site 24-hour mental health services that are available 7 days a week, I wanted to just clarify whether the intent is to have mental health services available 24 hours a day, or if you want to staff with mental health clinicians during the nighttime hours when youth are sleeping versus having them available to respond if needed within a 30-minute window or a 40-minute window, just because it has on-site and available are a little bit different, and I want to be sure that we're clear on what the expectation would be.
Yeah, I think that's open for discussion. I think, like we saw in some other agencies, the high need times are from after school time to bedtime, right? I think maybe an on-site response or available to respond after that.
24-hour availability for mental health needs with an emphasis during those hours that youth are available for the services.
Yeah, I think the important thing for us would be that the available to respond would be available for an in-person response, right? So
yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And Don, thank you for that clarification. For some of us that have been in this probation system for a while, we get accustomed to how our response is now. And I think one thing we're really trying to address is not always be reacting to a crisis, but more importantly, working to maybe avert the crisis if possible. And to both of your points, understanding that those times may occur in the early evening hours or prior to, obviously when youth are sleeping, to pay somebody to sit there, that's,
right.
If needed. So thank you for clarifying that. I think that is key.
Yeah.
One of the many issues, and we continue to address in all of the criminal justice system, is the mental health need. And it's such a vast area to call. I mean, you just have somebody that has a level of depression to some form of a diagnosis that has to be, treated in a particular way too. So, thank you for that. And Daniel, thank you for for running through and going through those. I knew for a fact that if the peer mentor navigator wasn't on here, I know Steve Kim's mute button mm-hmm. would come off as it should. Steve, that is a big point that, just like what Daniel had said, we've got multiple people that are guiding kids through the process, but to have one center point that really can be, hey, did you understand what Nasley said? Did you understand what Don said? Did you understand what Raymond and all these people? You've got one person that can kind of, break that down for them. So I think that'll be really key also. So, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, and along with that we're also supporting parents throughout this as well.
Yes.
Correct. I mean, at least that's what I want to make sure too, is I see that they have the case planning and having the parent be participant of that. But in my experience, sometimes parents aren't able to attend those scheduled meetings. And again, looking at being culturally sensitive and responsive, these are things that I hope have been considered when we're doing these time scheduled events. Having the parent be part of that process is really important as well.
Thank you, Nasley. That's a great point. Okay, moving on from the in-custody program side, just looking at the transition and reentry services and having Ken next to me here, I know one area that we're always looking to for that transition piece to enhance is the housing. Looking for some temporary housing, moving into some type of permanent housing. Most of these youth will be obviously young adults in their 20s, early 20s, and may not have the ability to go to a home or a family member's home or support or significant other's home. So that'll be a key component that we'll need to look into and start probably addressing early on in the process, because it takes time to build that relationship and how it's going to work. I know there's different funding for different youth out there for a period of time, but it's not a lifetime of funding. And how do we start building the capacity in youth to know that, okay, you've got 6 months covered in this housing for you, and how are we going to work from 5 months and 29 days forward to be able for you to build that housing capacity. I think we're all well aware on this call and on this committee that if that housing component isn't addressed, it's going to be quickly that these individuals move back into our system, the criminal justice system in some forms. If they have nowhere to go, they may go back into ways we don't want them to be in. So. Okay, is there anybody else on the committee? And again, I'm trying to look up here on the screen that has any comments related to this. I think this is probably the heaviest lift at the initial part of our plan as we put it together, because it's real clear in SB 823 how we intend to do that programming. Again, we're fortunate we're not building just from the ground up and kind of guessing what's needed, but more importantly, as we move forward and implement or review what we're looking at, what programs we have, how important it'll be to identify additional where we need to enhance. And again, there may be some things that aren't needed, and I don't want to, we have finite resources as always. We want to make sure we put our resources into the right areas as we move through. And Nasley, is this something I was thinking about, and I think you have said this before, how important it'll be to get the input from the youth also. As we get, especially when you move into the program phase and into that transition phase, is to get that youth's input along with their family too. Because maybe we think, oh, this youth can go back home, but the family members are telling us absolutely not. It's not appropriate, or it may take away from what this youth would need to continue to move forward. So.
Yeah, and I also appreciate the resources for research,
yes.
And that feedback that you're talking about is important, and that feedback also helps us inform our practice. And so having research be part of that, knowing that what we're doing is giving out the intended outcomes. So I'm glad to see that that's part of the plan as well.
Yeah, part eight is the data, and that might be something we'll need to build along the way too. Obviously, we can put out the intended outcomes that we're looking for, but ultimately we're going to have to go with the youth through this process along with their family to identify what those measurements would be. So, okay, anything else on that part of it? That would be part three of the plan, which is the program and services. The second section that was covered for us to go through for the time that we have left here today is part five, which is described as the facility plan to describe in detail each facilities that the county plans to use, house, confine, or target the target population. I think the key thing that then I spoke with Daniel on this, and I can have him come back up here, how important it is not just to name a facility, but more importantly, that the programs and the needs, including the facility that's needed for the youth, will follow the youth. And Dan, if I can just have you come up and kind of just sure. highlight that a little bit for us.
Sure. So I just shared this verbally at the last meeting, I believe. And so you have was posted that the agenda is written version crafted by Brian and myself. And so the main point is what I was trying to get across last time was that the Secure Track services follow the youth, not necessarily designated to a location. And so it will be the youth's overriding needs that will determine where they are housed, which could be, again, a gender-specific unit, it could be a mental health unit, it could be a sex offender-oriented unit, or a offense based, you know, for youth of similar offenses, high security type of unit, if that was necessary, or based on age. And so the requirement or the suggestion is that our housing and facility plan accommodate age, gender, special needs, and relevant characteristics. And so rather than try to build one place that can handle every single type of youth in one place, which might not be good for the individual youth in that situation, BSCC has approved that framework of having their status follow them wherever they are. So that's what we're planning on doing, and that's what's here in the draft for part five of the template. Also, that Secure Track youth can be court ordered to less restrictive options like YLA and YGC or the YRCs, even in the community or any community based organization. Or electronic confinement, those kinds of things. So we'll be accommodating that. So as far as where a youth would be housed, if they're ordered to a one of our camps, like YLA or YGC, that will really be a case-by-case situation. There is, I think, need to consider the age and sophistication of a youth when there might be the only Secure Track youth at a facility, for example. Let's say if a youth is being ordered to YGC, we would first look at their appropriateness, maturity, and ability to acclimate or assimilate into the whatever the population of YGC or the unit they're going to be living in is. So, for example, if they're maturity level, even things such as, you know, size and things like that might also play a part. When we're talking about a potential 24-year-old and a unit full of 14-year-olds. So it just is something we would consider on a case-by-case basis. If it looks like they will fold right into the population, fine. Maybe the population of the unit they're going into is of similar age and similar maturity, and there's not going to be any potential conflict or even just conflict in needs, then that might be appropriate for them to fold into the existing population unit. In CPOC's interpretation of the statute, when a judge orders a youth to one of these less restrictive options, it's seen as the intention is that the youth is going to participate in the program that as it exists. And so while the Secure Track services, additional services, will continue to be provided or follow the youth, it's not intended that YGC, for example, create a separate unit entirely for Secure Track youth. So that's how we're planning and prepared to accommodate Secure Track youth at all of our facilities. If there was a feeling or an opinion that a Secure Track youth being ordered to one of our camps might not be appropriate to be rolled into or assimilated into the existing population, then we would convey those concerns to the court and see if there are any other remedies. So, and that might be creating another unit for the youth, but it might be looking at other options. So, okay. Any questions on the facility plan?
Okay, I'm looking up at the committee there. Sorry, guys. Do you have any questions related to the facility plan? And again, we need to keep in mind, too, as we put these pieces of the plan and then ultimately have an agreement amongst our committee to move this forward to the JJCC. It's important to know that this plan is fluid and will need to be fluid, especially if you look at, Daniel, as you put in, and Brian, too, thank you. In the facility plan, we are also working hand-in-hand, Judge Motovike is well aware, and a few others on the call are aware, we are working to re-envision our whole juvenile justice campus, and that would provide us the ability of what we build as a new facility, if possible, on our current juvenile hall footprint, we'd be able to include that in here because the youth would, we obviously keep the court advised when that new type of a program is available or housing is available. But that gives us a flexibility that we're not just naming a facility, but all of our facilities can serve these youth to the best of our ability. And the great point, Daniel, too, is the youth reporting centers. We have an expansion of our North County Youth Reporting Center that's underway right now with some construction being done. And I think it's real important for those things. We've had youth reporting facilities in our department for a period of time. And it's very much as we're looking for, or as the desire of SB 23 is to be least restrictive, but there also is still that ability to have a level of for the youth to get the services that they need. But they're allowed to go home. So, again, it's an incentive, too. Or, again, provide as many options for the court will be real key. And I see, Judge Motovike, I see your hand up there. Thank you for using the hand up symbol. What you got for us?
Thank you, Chief. I'm sorry. I've been on vacation, and I actually have been engaged in the Bakersfield, and that's where I am right now. So I haven't had a chance to look at the facilities plan.
Okay.
I know that it's fluid. But I would like to reserve any kind of questions until the next meeting.
Okay.
I apologize. And I just also wanted to clarify or seek clarification. I know we're talking about SecureTrack, and I know Daniel was referencing that would be the plan for the SecureTrack use. I'm assuming that would be the plan then if the judge committed this use to SecureTrack. But since our target population also includes those who are not necessarily committed to the SYTF, I'm wondering, is there contemplation for facilities, suggestions on facilities for the youth fall within our target population but are not committed to the SecureTrack?
Yes, it would apply to the entire target population.
That makes
so,
sense.
I'm just clarifying that if a youth is actually committed to SecureTrack, that the option is still available. But all three facilities are currently available to eligible youth in the entire target population, and that would continue.
Right. So, Daniel, is the contemplation then that is anything going to change as far as the look of kid in the target population? Where he or she might be housed, but not committed to the SYTF?
No.
Okay. So that's just going to remain the same. That's the proposal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So for example, a female youth, we currently have two female units at Juvenile Hall and one at YGC, and regardless of SecureTrack designation, a female youth could be housed at either. And whether they're in the target population, the larger target population, or they're actually committed, they would continue to be housed in any of those units.
All right.
And I also...
Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, kind of to your other comment, just generally speaking, when we're working on this template, we're kind of filling in these sections, but this is all still draft. And then I think at some point there'll be a vote. So this is all still just suggestions and draft as we're filling in the different sections.
Okay. I just think it might be an opportunity for us to think about whether or not we do have appropriate type facilities for housing for our target population, because we're going to be implementing specific programming for them. That hopefully will address a lot of the issues, but it's just maybe an opportunity for us to review what we have right now for the target population, see whether or not we can enhance or improve what the facilities look like for that target population, as opposed to just the SYTF.
Okay, yeah, I think it's worthy of discussion, yeah.
All right, Judge. Hopefully you got both hands on the wheel if you're driving while you're talking, Judge. Okay, all right. Do we have any other questions from the committee? And again, we need to just remind it, and I appreciate the judge's questions. These are all sections of the plan that we intend to put together. We have the discussions along the way, make the adjustments along the way. And per your recommendation, Judge, we will bring the facility plan discussion back. The agenda for each one of these meetings remains the same, and I'm going to make a note right now to bring the facility plan discussion back up with the questions you had and the input, and I'll work with Daniel on that also. Okay, from the committee, anything else related to the facility plan? Sorry. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Daniel and Brian, for putting that part together. So with section two, the services and programs, and we discussed those two areas. Is there any other comments from the committee that I need to take public comments? I got you over there. At this point, looks like there's nothing. Is there any public comments related to item number two? And you want me to say it so it can?
So two, I think, but they can hear it from here too.
Okay,
so
go ahead.
If the public wishes to speak, if you can hit either star 9 or the raise hand icon on your Zoom app. By the way, there are no public members here at the meeting.
Okay.
So, no, there are no requests.
Okay, no public comments. And again, as Jamie said, thank you. No, there's no public here at our in-person meeting. Moving to item number three, discussion of subcommittee member reports. There is one, and I reached over and I asked Ken a quick question here related to housing is an area that we brought up. And as I understand, Ken has provided to us some language or some options with that, Ken. Is there anything you want to maybe brief the committee on that aspect of it?
The number of transitional housing programs, primarily through the state, mm-hmm. and funded with a combination of state, federal, and county match funding. They accommodate former foster youth, including probation wards. We have one program that is under 18. That's their THPP minor, we call it, or THPP services. And that's also serves foster youth and probation involved youth. So those are two. I'm sharing with Mr. Prado the breakdown of those and then the funding that goes along with it, just to have all the information.
And again, from the subcommittee, I remember back in April, I believe, when we started these, that housing was an area. If you look at kind of our processes now, youth come out, and we're fortunate to have Project Kinship and some other areas that work with us on that, but we'll probably need to solidify that somewhat better. For that youth that doesn't have an area to go, we don't want to just put them or place them back into the community without the housing component. So, okay.
We have an array of services as well.
Connected to the
so
you folks make sure that you heard that online there, that Ken was sharing, that there's, it's not just housing, here's a place to live, good luck to you, there's program and services that we would maybe even be replicated from what's already been occurring to build upon, but more importantly build those skill sets that are needed for the community. As we all know, it's not easy to survive out in the community, but we want to build as much success as possible for these young people. Okay, so with the discussion of subcommittee member group reports, is there anything from the subcommittee that would fit into that section? Our next meeting is going to be on September 2nd, and as we look at the draft plan, there are some actions that there's some parts of the sections that will. The information that's contained in our program and services and facility plan will cover some of those responses in that area. But I would be asking the subcommittee just to be aware, if you remember the target areas, relying, if you look at part 8 by chance, as data, be thinking about as a subcommittee, what are some initial data points that we would look to address, or as Nasley, as you had said, our outcomes that we're looking for, maybe those are what we are identifying at that point and build it back from there. Part 7, I just wanted to mention, and there's more information coming out on the statewide consortium. There's a statewide consortium that is being put together for basically what it's looking to do is three things. Ensure that every youth across the state has the opportunity to have the services that are available. Again, in our county, we have most of those areas identified at this point. But if that rare youth came across to us that we just we present it to the court and the court ask all of us to find, we need something just really unique, that we'll have a consortium available that will provide the ability to have services that maybe we don't have in this county. That's initially still being placed together. There is an initial request, and I'm going to bring it here to the subcommittee to keep them informed about just some initial funding that we will probably more likely be able to provide from our SB 823 monies just to get the consortium started. But what it is, and something just to be considered as our counties we work together, the piece that doesn't often get talked about that could be involved in this plan is litigation. DJJ was a type of, those facilities and that program through the state was constantly under some form of litigation, and the consortium is looking to assist with that too, that if we find ourselves into a situation where litigation, it's better to be in numbers and have some form of some continuity across the state to ensure that, I mean, when you look at SB 23, the intentions of it are pretty clear what they are, and we don't want to step out of line from that. But more importantly, it just helps down across the state to ensure that each youth is served. Making sure that we don't widen the net for our youth to end up into the adult system is part of that consortium too. And I'll bring some more information as that comes forward. A second piece too, we do mention BSCC as they will be the individuals that will come in and continue to inspect our facilities. But the OYCR, Office of Youth and Community Restoration, as I understand, statewide they put out a put out the information to find a director. I know the governor has put in budget a level of funding, and that's about as much as I know at this point, but I will keep the committee aware of that. That's where this plan, this initial plan will be sent to the OYCR, and then forward for years 2 and 3, the OYCR will be working as an entity through the state under Health and HSS with the state to assist counties across the board in working with these youth. Again, it's. I'm just trying to throw out, so the first part of the quiz would be for me to all the committee is, what is OYCR? And then if you know this Office of Youth and Community Restoration, as more information comes forward, that I will bring that to the committee as we move forward. So before I go to public comments on item number 3, is there any type of discussion of any type of subcommittees that are working on? Again, thank you, Judge Motueke, Don, Steve Kim, Daniel, everybody that worked on the programs. That's a key component there because the programming is really where we start to work with these youth, and we're able to do everything we can in that transition piece to continue to work on the capacity for the youth when they get released. But I'll make sure the other committee, I'll be the only one taking up all the time on the Zoom call here. Is there any questions from the committee? I'll make sure I don't see any hands up there. Fortunately, I have a bigger screen than a laptop, so that is helping. Jamie, I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, Jamie, can you ask for any public comments on item number 3, please?
Item number 3, if you can hit star 9 or this raise hand icon. No requests.
Okay, again, there is nobody here from the public at today's meeting, and there were no public comments coming virtually. And again, as we go back down to near adjournment of our meeting here, are there any comments from the committee? Judge Motueke, I've made a note about carrying over the facility plan to have further discussion about that upon your return for our next meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, nothing from the committee. Anything from public comments with anybody? Uh-oh, we got one take back from Chief Deputy Daniel Arnavis.
I'm speaking from the public. we had an internal or probation level statewide call this week, and several counties expressed the same, I guess, experience of our courts having different levels of understanding of where we are in the process of the implementation plan. And so I've heard also locally that different stories have been expressed in our juvenile courts about where we are in the process, or there's just a misunderstanding perhaps that the secure check program is in place because of the statute. And so I just want to encourage all of us or all of you as the committee members as well, to take back to your affected staff what the process is, where we are in the process, and what the timeline is, so that either the court is not misled or statements are not being made that we have services in place and things like that, or there's funding in place already to serve this population. And so I'm just asking that we all share with our affected staff that are involved in the system this process that is happening right now and kind of what the timelines are.
Thank you for Daniel. Thank you, Daniel. I think that is important for all of us committee and those that we reach out into our different groups that we work with, that we continue to build this plan to get the best plan possible with the information we have forward, that the plan will be fluid, and to make sure we keep our court informed. It's real key, and we're fortunate to have our presiding judge on this committee with us to help us with that, too. So thank you, Daniel. Okay, so we have no public comments, no other comments from the committee. Ken, you got anything? Good? Okay. Okay, so our next meeting will be Thursday, September 2nd at 2 p.m. It'll be here.
As of now, both of our meetings will be here.
Okay, so I'll make sure that the chair knows to be here at the grand office on time at 2 o'clock. I do apologize for that. I did walk in the middle of some commission meeting, and I didn't recognize a person, so I'm sorry, and I apologize for that. So it's great to see everybody. Thank you for the continued work on this, and we keep pushing forward, and again, keeping our one common goal is doing the best we can for the youth we serve. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.